Good morning, hello, and welcome to Ed Says for this, the 7th of February, 2017. It is Tuesday. On today's show, we are going to talk about white supremacy and flyers. They're advertising in Norwalk, of all places, the DeVos problem and how it illustrates politics as usual. We'll talk about skills that millennials need, including old school skills, as we'll talk to a communication skills analyst. We'll talk about Trump's latest lies, immigration ban gets a hearing, and the Excel Center to get a renovation, plus the possible return of the Whalers. But first, let's focus on New Haven, the protests there, and the police reaction. A protester was arrested for blocking an ambulance during the protest against the president. The lawyers say the police were responsible for blocking the ambulance, not the protesters. And then I was listening to Brad and Dan this morning, and they had a guest on, Paul Bass, and what he wrote about in the New Haven Independent, and the reaction from New Haven police in comparison to state police. There's a lot going on in the story as they are talking about multiple reviews here from Paul Bass's piece. State police are investigating how one of their dogs ended up attacking three cops at that protest in New Haven on Saturday. And the city police are investigating how state police remained in control of a protest on city streets and how this protest ended in tear gas arrests and charges of a police riot. Meanwhile, a barista named Nate Blair, who happens to be Buddhist, is recovering from a concussion after police wrestled him to the ground at the protest. There's a lot going on here. First of all, when it comes to protests, I'm all for it. You can protest whatever you want. If you want to protest the president, fine. If you want to stand outside a Planned Parenthood with your signs of fetuses and chant your slogans and shame people who are already scared and sad, you can. Congratulations to you. It is when you're... The argument here is there are those who say civil disobedience, and there is a fine line between protesting into crossing over into civil disobedience, into crossing over into criminal activity slash rioting. There is a very fine line, and there are those that say if you're going, just regular protesting doesn't do anything. If you're not blocking highways, if you're not inconveniencing people, you're not doing enough. And I don't know if that's the case. For me, I see it. I recognize it. I see you protesting. If it's something I'm in, I'm down with, fine. I'm already down with it. The very few times will my mind be changed by a protest, because a sign isn't enough to encapsulate a very complicated issue. But this protest will get press, which then I might read the article and dig a little deeper. But inconveniencing people or insulting people or assaulting people does not paint your movement in the best light, at least in my opinion. And now there are stories going back and forth as to who was responsible for this ambulance that apparently someone was in and needed life-saving care in the ambulance because of the delay. Although, when asked, state police said ask the hospital. The hospital hasn't been able to confirm anything. So the protesters saying they got out of the way whenever anybody was trying to get by. Again, shutting down highways, shutting down roads, making life difficult for the average Joe isn't really civil disobedience. It's just screwing over your fellow citizen. Civil disobedience can be done, I think, without moving people to stand against whatever it is you're protesting or standing for whatever it is you're out there for. But there are those that say there is no system to protesting, because I'm also not one for free speech zones. We have the right to peaceably assemble. And the thing is, the debate goes back and forth. People who don't agree with what the protesters are protesting are like, oh, get a job, you layabouts. But On the flip side, this nation was pretty much founded on a protest that destroyed other people's property. And now there's a political movement named after that. So let's not remember, or let's not forget, we're not that far removed from it as far as pride and nation. But what's more concerning is the disconnect, the miscommunication, and the wondering of whose authority is whose when it comes to the police. Is this a New Haven police situation, or was this the state police? There was a road that was blocked. It was a state road. It was cleared. And at that point, shouldn't the state police have fallen back? But what is being charged is that they are the ones that escalated it, that New Haven police had more of a hands-off approach, whereas the state police had more of a tactical approach. And therein lies the problem. This militarization, this idea of us against them, when it comes to a protest, it is not an us against them. It is allowing people to express their rights and do so lawfully. And you can get a lot more done by telling someone or asking someone rather than forcing someone. That's just my opinion. And you talk about this as there are internal reviews at the Connecticut State Police and the New Haven Police Department. And in New Haven, they've got a thing about peaceful protests and has avoided the kind of chaos they say came out on Saturday. The need for any of those disbursement tools or violence. It began outside City Hall Saturday afternoon. 200 demonstrators were there about the travel ban, which we'll talk about later. Around 5, the protesters marched to Route 34, which is a state road. So state police arrived on the scene. In the official statement, the state police said that the protesters blocked the path of emergency vehicles. And as I said, and when asked for more information, the state police said to ask the hospital, which had no details. And the protesters released a statement saying they never blocked any vehicles and had informed everyone to move out of the way if a vehicle needed to pass through. Now, a lawyer for the protesters, Patricia Kane, said she had introduced herself to 3 troopers and identified herself, said the protesters would move out of the way of any emergency vehicles. She said the troopers told her to move out of the way, and one of the troopers' dogs lunged at her. About half an hour later, the protesters left the state road, went up Church Street, and when New Haven police arrived, state police continued to follow the protesters. And therein lies the problem. When you're off a state road, I would think the idea of chasing them would end. In my opinion, isn't that New Haven's jurisdiction at that point? And the state police go, all right, guys, you got this. But from all accounts, it appears as though the state police kept getting involved. And again, there were dogs involved, 2 police forces. And as they were searching, the state police were searching for one of the protest leaders. They decided to look for him, and he ran, so they pursued. Whereas in New Haven, according to Bass and the interview he had with Brad and Dan, that it's not a pursuit. It is more of a contain. If he runs, they're like, hey, they radio down to somebody else, heading your way, keep an eye out. It's not as though they won't find him, but it's this escalation of, and it looks like on this part of the state police. I mean, you had dogs and pepper spray involved, and there was no reason for it. I'd like to know if you agree or disagree. 888-574-2723. As the facts are being presented, it was an unnecessary escalation, in my opinion. 888-574-2723. Your thoughts on what happened in New Haven and the reaction to it. Up next, we're also going to look at what happened in Norwalk. What is being distributed? And is this just the world we live in now? That's next on Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. Just wrapping up the discussion about New Haven protests and the police reaction, and you had 2 different police forces. Police officials in New Haven including Chief Campbell. Chief Campbell saying that he never knew the rally was taking place to begin with, which is odd because it seems in the past that the police there have always been in touch with the protesters, organizers, and they normally meet in advance, and that didn't happen this time. So, again, communication always the best thing. And he mentioned that New Haven officers are not supposed to rush after nonviolent targets in a crowd situation and use canines or pepper spray. So, Mayor Tony Harp reiterated that on a radio program, Mayor Monday. She said that New Haven has a tradition of working with protesters and doesn't, as a rule, use dogs or pepper spray in crowds where no violent offenses are occurring, saying that our officers learn de-escalation. She said that police are determined to protect the rights of citizens to protest and also expect organizers to work with police. So the question is, what about the state police? Spokesperson for Governor Malloy saying the police dog should not have attacked the three officers. And the question is, at least on the canine, was this the dog and its temperament, or was this due to the handler? And Kelly Donnelly, the spokesperson there, saying the Connecticut State Police have expressed that they take this matter very seriously. Well, expression and actually doing so are two different things. There are multiple reviews going on, so we'll have to wait and hear what really comes of it. The reason the state police had dogs in the first place is because the officer at the scene happened to be a canine officer. Well, I'm pretty sure the dog doesn't let itself out of the vehicle. I'm pretty sure canine officers are equipped to react sans dog. They don't necessarily, they're not attached at the hip. The dog bit two troopers, one of whom was treated and released, and another bit a police officer's clothing. It just seems as though it was an overreaction. It wasn't necessary. This idea that you hippie protesters get a job or whatever, again, is our right to peaceably assemble. No matter how it is, even if it's just three people on a street corner getting harassed by an officer asking, you know, what are you doing? What are you up to? It doesn't happen in a lot of places. And it shouldn't happen in a protest. But again, communication, a big part of it, not just between the protesters and the New Haven police, but between the New Haven police and the state police. And that dog probably could have just stayed in the car, unless they trained it to open the door, which then it's on the dog. 888-574-2723. There's a lot of talk about the alt-right, which is just a code name for white supremacy in a lot of people's eyes. Steve Bannon is a figurehead for the alt-right, and a lot of people have an issue with that. Now, in Norwalk, white supremacist flyers were found in driveways and mailboxes in the Cranberry area of the city. Printed flyers, several hundred of them, were in plastic sleeves, weighted down with gravel, were tossed into driveways on Upper Newtown Avenue. And the message read, "We must secure the existence of our race and a future for white children. Make America white again." This is for the white nationalist movement. Links to a website. This is kind of garbage that just makes me sad. Let's go to Frank in Watertown. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Ed. Look, as far as it goes with those protesters, I think that they spilled over onto a state highway and didn't have a permit or something like that. But you know what? It's about time that somebody starts thinking about the people who are inconvenienced by the protesters who should have permits. You have to have a permit to protest, and you're designated to a certain area. What right do you have to obstruct a highway and obstruct me from getting to work or getting to the hospital to see somebody? You know, you that's what the laws are for. If you don't obey the law, you get arrested. That's all there is to it.
Well, yeah, you probably, it sounds like you joined the show early because I addressed a couple of those things. Yes, they spilled onto a state road. They were asked to move. It took about a half hour. The state police have jurisdiction there. They were then gone. I think what happened was the state police continued to follow them when they returned to New Haven City Police jurisdiction, and actually pursued one of the organizers of the protest, which goes against what New Haven City Police would usually do. And the question is whether or not it contributes. And as far as you said, inconveniencing other people, I agree with you. I don't think it brings any sort of positive energy towards what you're protesting. But at the same time, are there really rules when it comes to protesting? At what point, if we're putting people in safe zones to speak and, you know, just putting them off to the side, isn't that silencing a protest? What about civil disobedience?
Well, you know, what happens when protesters start throwing firebombs at
them? As I said, there's a line between protesting, which is, you know, just standing around chanting, civil disobedience, which I think is when you're blocking a road or inconveniencing other people, and then you've moved into a riot/crime scenario. So in my eyes, there are three different things. As far as civil disobedience goes, you know what? There are people that will ruin your commute. Like the other day, I was on the road and I was in the right lane getting ready to make a right-hand turn into the right lane. A person in the left lane wanted to get where I was, but we were side by side. They stopped in the middle of a four-lane road, Queen Street, out in Southington, to make their right turn from the far left lane. Like, that person, not protesting anything, but just inconvenienced numerous people. A danger, really.
That's just an idiot.
Right, exactly. But it happens on a daily basis. It happens all the time. Inconvenience, I don't think, is necessarily illegal. Does it stink? Yes. But the word is that the protesters were moving out of the way for the cars. I think the problem is that you saw two different ways to handle it. You saw the New Haven City Police and the State Police. And the difference is the New Haven City Police have a vested interest in keeping things calm in their city, whereas the State Police in this case seems like they just thought that they were the authority and they're going to drop the hammer. And I think de-escalation is probably what should be taught now, rather than look at all these sweet toys and dogs we have. Let's enforce our will.
Well, you know, it comes to a situation, like you said, when you're inconveniencing the public, and maybe the reason that they have them in a designated area, if they do throw firebombs, they got the fire department and the police department there, they can contain the situation. Well, if they let them go anywhere they want, then you can't be covering all the areas. That's probably why they want them in a certain area.
Well, Frank, I'm going to respectfully disagree with you. If somebody wants to throw a firebomb, they're probably not going to be of the same thinking of, well, I better stay in this contained area. They're going to go do it wherever they want. I appreciate the call. I'm up against a break here. The idea of being inconvenienced, yes, it stinks. And again, I agree with you. I don't think it helps bring more people to your cause. At the same time, inconvenience, not necessarily illegal. I'm inconvenienced anytime I go out in public by people who walk four astride in a shopping mall talking to each other side by side while I'm just trying to get past them. And they're doing so slowly. Like, that drives me crazy. 888-574-2723, the number. We're talking about protests in New Haven. We're talking about white supremacist flyers found in Norwalk. Anything you want. It's Ed Says here, live and local, on the Talk of Connecticut. Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. We are talking the protests in New Haven and the differing reactions from two different police forces. And we're talking about flyers in Norwalk being distributed that said, Make America White Again. Let's go to Ann in Naugatuck. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well.
Good morning to all of my listeners. I just have a request to everybody from my top to bottom, all leadership and everybody. Please be polite to when you speak to the public. Please, if you are law enforcement agencies, talk to the protester politely. And the protester need to be bring their leaders who are going to talk and explain their program to the enforcement agencies. We don't want to destroy this planet and this earth. We all need to be solved the problem. Everybody has problem, even in the home and the family and the relatives, sometimes in the friends too. So deal with like the way which the God provides to us. Just the power of your talk is better than fight. It's better than war in the world. So all the time when the big fight's over, we all sit on the table and they solve the problem. When we had lots of losses, and we have lots of lives away from us. So please control yourself, everybody. Request to everybody, we are one nation under God, and there's justice for all. Don't treat the people who protest somewhere in Washington VIP treatment. Some in the New Haven, the poor neighborhood, please treat them even and listen to them what they said. Try to solve their problems. And they are not illiterate. If they talk different language, bring the interpreter. Talk to them what they want to say. They have left behind in their countries. They want them to join them. Or they want to go back there. So make a bridge. Don't destroy the bridges. We in this globe, don't destroy it. Please.
And I thank you for the call. I agree with you. I think sometimes we are quick to have knee-jerk reactions, have visceral, sometimes violent reactions to something we don't necessarily agree with or vehemently disagree with. And as I said, de-escalation is probably the key. Approaching someone, even if I take a call with someone and immediately get aggressive, it dictates the way things are. I try to be better than that. Sometimes I fail, and definitely those in law enforcement, de-escalation is the word of the day, and more police departments are turning that way. Let's go to Mike in Glastonbury. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Ed. The term you were quoted as referencing in a couple of news stories, white supremacist, I got to wondering if it's a complete term, so I went over and looked in a big heavy dictionary, and I did find supremacist, which simply says it's a person who believes that a certain group is or should be supreme. But then you can attach an adjective to it, like white or male or chauvinist or regional or any other term to qualify it. And then I started to wonder, in a competitive society of the kind that we all seem to be living in, isn't everyone to some degree a supremacist just to maintain their identity? Or is it a pejorative term that one person who's having difficulty with their identity attaches to another person? Or does everybody have a right to be thinking of themselves just in terms of some degree of self-esteem as also being a supremacist? So I think we're kind of using, things that are either elusive or very subtle, and these are very convenient clubs in a competitive society, especially with the diffusion of news designed to excite people to more or less beat one another up with. But I kind of like the term because it is provocative. But I'd like to see more refinement of insulting terms used in news stories.
Well, then maybe the term white nationalist is more appropriate.
That's a pretty good one. And then the only people I could think of there were the former South African government of 20, 25, 50-something years that came into existence back in 1948. Where they actually had it written into their national charter or whatever it was. And that was based in turn upon a Dutch Reformed group called the Broederbond, which just means the Brotherhood, or Bund is originally meant something like a bootlace. However, this group that put the flyers into people's driveways, anybody can go to a copy machine and print, you know, the most vile stuff up, and in a calculated way get everybody upset, which I think is really part of this operation. Goodness knows who uses what word or what idea. And anyway, confusion seems to be the only thing that always reigns supreme. And I hope you have a moderately confusing but a supreme day.
Well, thank you, sir. When it comes to the possibility of someone doing this, that is within the realm of possibility. But we've seen it in Maine recently, and we've seen it in multiple places, but particularly here in Connecticut. This happened in Norwalk, and it has a website by a noted white supremacist or white nationalist, Mike Enoch. The Southern Poverty Law Center characterizes as an alt-right extremist. And you're right. It could be somebody who knows, familiar with that website, and looking to stir things up. But it's also happening in multiple places, so I'm not quite sure. But the fact remains that these places exist. These websites, these thoughts exist. So if it's not somebody actively trying to recruit for them, if somebody's doing it to rabble-rouse, isn't it still exposing that this exists? And the question is a free speech? I am all for people like this Mike Enoch guy who wants to believe in the supremacy in a white nation, but it is not going to happen. It cannot happen based on the way the United States of America was founded. I will defend his right to say this stupid stuff, just as I would defend Westboro Baptist Church. I don't agree with it, but that's what makes America what it is. We don't necessarily get to agree with people every time. Let's go to Tim in Hamden. Good morning, Tim.
Well, good afternoon. Or good morning, excuse me. I'm really upset about all these people up in Boston throwing tea into the harbor. Oh, wait. That's how our country started. Let's see.
Yeah, with a protest. With a violent protest. Where they destroyed people's stuff. Oh, and tried to blame it on someone else.
Well, in the case, I lived in Rhode Island, and that was some of the burning of the Gatsby ship was one of the first, long before the Tea Party, you know, the acts of civil disobedience, you know, taken to the extreme. So, you know, I just wish all these people who would call up and just be very careful. So, you know, it's, we've got people who, you know, occupy, rest stops and other places out west because they don't like the Bureau of Land Management. They occupy this with guns. And, we sit back and we watch them for weeks and weeks on end. This is an ongoing situation, but, you know, this country was founded on white supremacy. I mean, essentially we, you know, stole people from Africa, sold them into slavery here in the United States, and then did not give them constitutional rights in our Constitution. They were declared three-fifths people to be counted, but only to be counted. They didn't have, you know, legal rights. They didn't have standing as citizens. I'm just shocked that we've gone so far to, you know, that people say up, yes, you need a permit to protest.
Yeah,
so I go to
absurd.
You go to your local, you know, town hall, and they say, no, we're not going to give you a permit. Okay, so we'll let you do this in this certain park in this certain area. That's not a protest. Maybe that's some sort of, you know, meeting or something that you can, you know, it's not the same thing as organizing an Apple Festival. It's a completely different situation. These people have a right to be mad. It's a life and death kind of situation where people they know are going to be denied health care, you know, being not allowed into this country because they're fleeing horrible, horrible situations. You've got, you know, a president who is not listening. And, you know, I did hear the interview with Paul Bass, an excellent reporter, you know, on the Brad Davis show. And Brad Davis, how long are these protests going to go on? And Paul said,
we've only got
4 years. You know, so the resistance, and that's the term, hashtag resistance, folks, is not going to stop. It's not going to go away. We're not going to all hold our hands and sing kumbaya to Donald Trump. It's just not going to happen. If you think we're all going to get over it, you know, we've got to, you know, people need to rise up and be out in the street and, you know, look at the people that he's appointing to national security councils, like, you know, Bannon and everybody else who've published this horrible, hateful stuff. And, you know, this is a good test of American character.
And in my estimation... Tim, I would say we're failing. I thank you for the call, as always. I'm going to go to Louise in Hamden. Good morning, Louise.
Luis. Luis, yes, it's Spanish.
Yeah, sorry. My producers are half-assing it this week.
Hey, you know, as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, okay, fascist socialism, also known as Nazism, and Marxist socialism, communism, are two sides of the very same coin. You know, the fascist socialists and the Marxist socialists, They always seem to be battling each other and trying to identify themselves with mainstream groups. You know, like Middle America Democrats, Middle America Republicans. And I think there's a lot of confusion going on. These white supremacism is a fascist socialist thing. It would be, you know, the Nazis had the same thing. And they were battling the communists, you know, for the longest time. And I see the same kind of thing going on in this country. The fascist socialists and the Marxist socialists, the Nazis and the communists. And I don't really think mainstream America really has anything to do with that. And I don't think I'm a conservative, you know, and my mother is very much a liberal. But, you know, we're kind of like in the mainstream. We're not fascist socialists. We're not Marxist socialists. That's something else that's going on independent of the American people. And when I'm hearing these callers this morning, they're so convoluted in their discussion. It's kind of like, I think they're confused. I think there is a kind of an attempt to merge these wild socialist theories with America in the American way, and I don't think they mix. What do you think?
I definitely don't think the idea of one supreme race is an American thing. And I don't think one voice is an American thing. I think all voices need to be counted. Let's go to Larry in Bridgeport. Good morning, Larry.
Hey, how you doing, Ed?
Doing all right. What's up?
Ed, you know I don't agree with you on certain things, and certain things I do agree with you on. The comment I wanted to make was, you know, I have three people that I know who are in the state police. And I'll tell you, they're real nice to have around when you need them, okay? They put their lives on the line every day. They're dealing with God knows who on the highways. I wasn't there at that protest. I'm a firm believer in the freedom of protest. I don't know if you were there at the protest. Again, I don't believe in violence, okay? I believe everyone has the right to protest, and I don't believe you need a permit to protest, okay? So I'm actually pretty middle of the road on that. The comment I wanted to make was, whether I'm looking at the Berkeley riots, and I would speak to the caller two before, not this last gentleman, but the one before him who said, you know, we're not going to stop protesting. My response to him would be, I don't want you to stop protesting, okay? But I also don't want to destroy private property like you did at Berkeley, where my sister went to school, and also to assault people, okay? There are people beaten up in Berkeley.
So, Larry, there I would make a distinction in that there are protesters, and then there are provocateurs, there are opportunists, and they are not always one and the same. When you saw people who are running around dressed in all black with their faces covered, I don't think they were affiliated with any legitimate protest. They were just there to cause trouble. We all know that there are people who will take an opportunity, even down to the most basic. Maybe it's a substitute teacher. And, you know, the kid in class that will do everything to take advantage of it. There's always someone willing to take advantage of the anonymity of being in a crowd.
But, hey, let me say one thing. I'm agreeing with you. But a lot of these people who have their face covered are walking with people who are protesting Trump. So I look at them as you're known by the company you keep, okay? And I want to make one other quick point. In Washington, at the inauguration, I don't know if you read Politico's article the day after, but there were 11 parents of soldiers who died in Iraq or Afghanistan who were assaulted by protesters, anti-Trump people. So I would tell your caller, not your last caller, but the one before, who said we're not going to stop protesting, I don't want you to stop protesting, but do me a favor. Don't assault the parents of fallen soldiers who might show up and support Trump. Don't assault them and beat them up.
That's well, Larry, I thank you for the call. I got to hit a break. Up next, we're going to talk to communication skills analyst Jim Whidden. If you are on hold, we're going to go through this interview. We'll be back at 11. So if you want to call back, we'll continue this conversation. We're talking about protesting. We're talking about white supremacy. We're talking about all sorts of stuff. 888-574-2723 at 11 o'clock. We'll take more calls. But up next, Jim Whidden. We'll talk to him. That's next here on Ed Says on the Talk of Connecticut. Welcome back to Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut. Joining us now is communication skills analyst Jim Whidden, on to talk about the need for millennials to discover old school skills. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Hi, Ed. Great to be with you.
This is a great topic for those of you who might have millennial children, or maybe those of you that work for me who are millennials who seem to have a hard time shoring up your skills needed for this job. Maybe we can give them some advice for their next career. Right, Jim?
Absolutely.
I'm specifically referring to my producer there. When you talk about millennials, they are considered to be the more tech-savvy generation. They were born into it, whereas Gen X was born with it. And of course, the older folks just had to learn it as they went. What is this idea of old school skills that millennials are lacking?
Well, you know, I'm a boomer and I have four millennials. So I decided to write a book called The Old School Advantage that addresses these issues mainly for my kids. And now it's available for all. But it, you know, we live in a generation that's supposedly the most connected, but we seem to be the most disconnected. So there's it's ironic, at least on a personal level, we seem to be very disconnected. I call it the age of distraction because of the tyranny of these rectangles that are surrounding us. I've got four surrounding me even as I talk to you. So it's not really the technology being used that is the problem. It's the overuse and the abuse of it that is creating the issues.
You know, I saw that the other day. My family got together, my wife, my son, and my parents at their house for the Super Bowl. And my mom was making something, and my son was playing with his toys. But my wife, my father, and I were all nose deep in our screens. And I was like, "Why? We're here to see each other. Like, shouldn't we spend some time with that?" And what you're saying is that millennials are missing out on other skills because of the time spent in the screen?
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. You know, when you go to your screen, studies have shown that it takes about 8 minutes to get back to the concentration level you were at. If you're in a conversation, for example, that's a long time. If you do the math on that, if you have 8 distractions an hour, you really accomplish nothing in that hour. And so it's very important to be able to focus on one thing or the other. The problem is we're mixing those and we're not getting as much done, and we're certainly, our relationships are suffering as well, in my opinion.
And what are these soft skills that people are talking about?
Well, let me give you a few of them. One we call ready recall. That just simply means being able to remember a short-term list of items. So instead of needing notes or PowerPoint, if you can memorize things very short term, then you can look into the eyes of your audience, whether that's an audience of one or 1,000. Another one is what we call creating words that wow, which, first of all, you have to scrub your vocabulary of those words such as like and awesome and so, and replace them. How about this instead of awesome? How about saying exceptional or extraordinary? Another one is asking great questions. People know who you're more by the questions you ask than the statements you make. That's very old school, but that's quite overlooked today. And then a fourth one would be storytelling, being able to tell a story, whether it's a 30-second story or a 15-minute story, that is sticky so that people can remember it and it can make an impact on them. If you can become a master storyteller in this day and time, you're going to write your own ticket.
And is it texting that is removed? Because a lot of that there is communication. Those are all just important. Since I'm a mass comm major, I actually learned some of those things. My degree is coming in handy for once.
There you go.
But it's all communication. And is it texting that has removed that? The reliance on emoticons and writing things out in, you know, shorthand rather than actually just picking up the phone and talking to someone, even if you're not face-to-face, that verbal, you can communicate so much more like we are right now. I can't see you, but we can communicate through our intonations and our speed and the words we use.
You know, you can think of it. We've developed what is called a scale of interpersonal connectedness. And I don't know if that's a real word, but I made it up, so it is now. But the scale starts at the bottom with a text message, so let's give it a score of 1. Then it moves to an email, say a score of 3 from 1 to 10. because you can expand and send many more characters, obviously, more efficiently, and you can send it to many more people more efficiently. And then you arrive at what we're doing right now, and that is a personal phone conversation where you can hear intonation and pauses and volumes. It then moves into a face-to-face, which would be best for us if we had that interview opportunity. And then, believe it or not, I put a handwritten note in your own handwriting above a face-to-face only because it can be revisited, and it's so unique. So that is kind of what you're talking about. How do we connect? The text message is the worst way.
That's interesting. And just so you know, connectedness is a word.
All right.
I looked it up for you. Is there a quick test that I can say give my millennial producer to see where his skills are? Is there any way I can measure him? Not right now, but maybe off the air, as a way to improve these old school skills for him?
You know, it's really about wisdom, Ed. It's not so much about information anymore. We're drowning in information, but what we need is discernment and wisdom. And I actually did develop, in the book I mentioned, The Old School Advantage, a wisdom quotient. And there's a formula in there that you can go and see, and that might be a good start for you to assess the wisdom of your millennials, which I think is a great road to go down, because if the wiser they are, the more successful they will be, and henceforth it's going to help you become more successful as well.
Communication skills analyst Jim Whitten, give me the info on that book one more time, sir.
Yes, the title is The Old School Advantage, and you can go to theoldschooladvantage.com. Our main website is linked there as well, and the book is available wherever books are sold.
Well, thank you, sir. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you.
888-574-2723, the number into the studio. Anything you want to talk about? We were talking about protests, white supremacy. We'll also look at the DeVos problem and Trump's lies. As he says, attacks were ignored by the media. Christian, I need you tomorrow. We'll have a meeting, say, at 3. We'll go 3 to 6.
Oh, boy.
And I'll go to that website, and we'll come up with the whole thing. How does that sound?
That sounds just dandy.
At least you didn't say like. That would have set me off the deep end.
Oh, God, no.
We'll be right back here on Ed Says on the Talk of Connecticut.